There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Welcome to the Get In Podcast, presented by Fourth and Dude, brought to you by EagleInsider.com and the Armchair Media Network, Season 5, NC State Week. With the heartbreaker in Death Valley officially in the rearview mirror, the Eagles look to get back in the win column against the dangerous NC State squad. On today's episode, we'll revisit lessons learned from the Clemson game, reevaluate our national championship expectations, and preview the massive showdown against the Wolfpack on Saturday night in Chestnut Hill.
Matt, five games in, sitting at 4-1. It feels like it really should be sitting at 5-0, but despite the depression we've been in for the past 10 days, I'm still feeling really, really good about what's ahead for Halfley and the boys. Short episode and lots to get to tonight, but before we dive in, a quick word from our friends in the Spotify Green Room. Spotify Green Room is a live audio-only sports talk platform, free to download and use. Talk to other fans, athletes, insiders, your favorite podcast host, all in real time. Perfect for watch parties, debates, post-game breakdowns, reacting to breaking news. It's like your own in-person message board. All you need to do is download the Spotify Green Room app, free in the iOS App Store. Create a profile, link your Twitter, and show up to the Spotify Green Room with your spiciest takes. Matt, I'll be honest, I'm still not quite emotionally ready to revisit Clemson, so I don't want to spend a ton of time here, but let me just say, like, we were the better team, period, and that's why this loss was so painful, but at the same time, I now have full confidence that we can handle every team left on our schedule, and you know, really, the ACC is still fully ours for the taking.
Listen, football comes down to, you know, four or five plays, you know, per game. That's really what separates winning and losing. Unfortunately, you know, there was a lot of bright spots, a lot of good things that happened on Saturday, you know, last Saturday. But at the end of the day, you have to make those winning plays at the end of ball games, especially against teams like Clemson. I might have a quick disagreement that we were the better team. I don't know that we necessarily, I think we sort of got outplayed a little bit. Certainly, if you look at, you know, total yards, we were lucky to be in the game. You know, by the time the fourth quarter rolled around, fortunately, our red zone defense was great. But it would have been one of those, you know, signature wins of the Halfley era. And I don't know, I think we're one year away until Halfley gets his big W against Clemson. I'm pretty sure next year we're going to get him.
Yeah, at home would have been nice there. I mean, you know, again, at the end of the day, like, I think everyone did enough to win. You know, if you look at the anatomy of an upset, like that fourth down stop on the first drive, you get the punt block, you get a couple other like big plays, you know, things were going our way. And that touchdown drive at the start of the second half, you know, looked so easy. It was like we had halftime adjustments and we're ready to roll. And then you look at just too many mistakes, couple interceptions, couple bad throws here and there. And you know, obviously the fumbled snap is just a, you know, really a painful way to lose it. Like I was saying after the game, you know, that loss is going to hurt no matter what. But you know, if we go down there and it was a really nice drive to get down in that position, Denny did amazing. And, you know, if we go four and out and you know, we throw a couple balls out of the end zone or you know, they make a play to stop it, you know, it still sucks, but you can live with it. The way this one went down just really felt like, again, everything was lining up for this to finally be our, you know, breakthrough top 25 win, you know, our breakthrough Clemson win, and for it to disappear in literally the matter of half a second. Really, really tough to get over. Like I said, we're sitting here 10 days later, and it's, you know, frankly, not all that easier.
We were a different team in the second half. I think that's one of the biggest positives to take away from Clemson is halftime Halfley is officially back. I don't know what happened to put the you know, the flip switch, and all of a sudden, you know, guys were getting separation. It seemed like the routes were a little more manageable, both for the quarterback and for the receivers. The tempo was just a little more, I think it kind of kept everyone in the game, you know, going a little bit faster in the second half. And yeah, to your point, I mean, that last drive of the game, and there was a couple drives like that in the second half where they were just dealing and guys were wide open and they were 20 yard gains. And, you know, it was almost too easy. And there was no doubt in all of our minds, that we were going to score obviously with that minute to go from the 12-yard line. So obviously sucks. I think that, you know, if you really want to focus in on the fumble itself, I mean, I think it was just a result of, like you said, it was a road game. We played Clemson on the road three straight years.
It's the first time we've had a loud, basically loud road crowd in 2 years, right? And first under halfway. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you can only simulate so much in practice. And, you know, you saw it was a few times, right, that the snaps were going. And I don't know how you fix that, whether you do, you know, the silent count and you have the guard tap the center and then he snaps the ball. I don't know. I mean, but there has to be a way. And that's, unfortunately, it sucks when wins and losses come down to stupid stuff like that. But, yeah, we played well enough to stay in the ball game. I thought our offense did pretty good, all things considered. I know Denny's catching a little bit of flack for missing some of the deep balls, but guys, this is Clemson. This is a really, really good defense. It's still a top five defense. I know they were banged up front, but these are five-star athletes we're playing against. And for us to put up, and it was only 13 points, we played much better than that, right? And certainly if you hit on those deep balls to Zay, if you maybe get one of those interceptions back, maybe it's a different ball game. But the kid threw for 311 yards. That's pretty good. I was on a different podcast, no big deal, a couple days ago where I gave this stat. Matt, get this. In the last – I don't have it in front of me now, but in the last 3 years, something like that, only four quarterbacks have thrown for 300 yards against Clemson. Justin Fields, that nerd Ian Book, Joe Burrow, and Denny Griselle. So
it's good company.
I don't care. That's a really good list to be on. It's still Clemson. Frankly, if I'm going to assess blame, I had a bigger bone to pick with our defense than anything. I mean, Clemson has been inept all year at matriculating the ball down the field. And, you know, they racked up nearly 500 yards of offense. Fortunately, you know, we clamped down in the red zone and we were able to hold them to four field goals and just that one touchdown. But I expect a little bit better from our defense, frankly, because that's not a good, you know, Clemson team hasn't shown much offense to date. So I think a lot of people are pointing the finger at one specific person. Predictably, I'm the one that's going to say, you know, we lost that as a team. There's plenty of blame to go around. It's not just one play at the end of the game, you know, on a fumble that could have been anyone's fault.
Yeah, a couple takeaways for me. First is just that Clemson is not a good football team this year. And, you know, when we talk about what this ACC race is going to look like, obviously they already have one conference loss to NC State. I don't see a world. I mean, I know everyone's saying they're just going to run the table the rest of the way. Like, it's not going to shock me at all. And if anything, I might, you know, bet on the fact that they will lose another game. They'll end at two losses. But I mean, look, mathematically, even if we now win out, we beat NC State this weekend. Obviously that implies we beat Wake Forest at the end of it. So we finish with one loss. NC State will have at least the one loss to us. Wake Forest will have at least the one loss to us. This is going to be a bit of like a coastal chaos here. And I think that, you know, that gives me a lot of optimism that, you know, we're actually going to be playing meaningful football games. And I mean meaningful, not just are we going to get to bowl eligibility in November, which is going to be a great change.
Just on that point real quick, just while you're talking about that. And we talked last week about like it's like a playoff race, like, and you're checking the standings, you're checking the scores.
Right.
Like, how fun is that? We haven't had that in a decade. And
no, right? Like, you finally have an opponent that's down in Clemson and you have that opportunity.
And here's the game to watch. Certainly when everyone plays Wake Forest, because Wake Forest is currently in the driver's seat. They haven't really played much competition to date. They barely beat Syracuse last week. I wouldn't say I'm scared of Wake yet, but everyone has to play Wake. When I say everyone, I mean us, Clemson, NC State, right? Clemson's crossover, one of their crossovers this year is Pitt, who's actually a pretty darn good football team.
Pitt's good.
So 10-23, that's a date to circle on your calendar. Clemson at Pitt, I think that could be a potential loss. And then NC State, if we take care of business against NC State, and then we run the table, you know, how hard can that be?
Yeah, we control our
destiny. Yeah, we're in, and we're C champs. So.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Look, it's at least exciting, and I think that's, you know, the downside really of the last decade in this conference has been a dominant Florida State followed by a dominant Clemson. So there really hasn't been a chance for anyone who is not a national title contender to, you know, compete for an ACC, at least on our side of the conference. So nice change there. I'm a little higher on the defense than you are. You know, again, talent wise, like, there is such a mismatch there, and I it's not an excuse because Clemson has been completely inept, to your point, all year, and the yardage there was, you know, pretty significant. But at the end of the day, I think with the talent that we have, I think the schemes were in place, you know, to be built that way, to, you know, give up field goals when they got in the red zone. So overall, you know, I was okay with that. I think they, you know, did enough to keep us in the game. My biggest takeaway from this, Matt, was the game plan. And I'm not necessarily going to criticize the game plan. I know that was kind of a hot button issue immediately after the game. My bigger takeaway is how we need to be using this game plan for the rest of the year on offense. The deep throws, and you mentioned that he missed a couple, and you know, Zay has huge separation every time he leaves the line of scrimmage. Like, that's just not in Denny's repertoire, and that's okay. I think we need to be okay with that he's not going to be hitting the 40-yard bombs that Jerko hit with ease. We play a different style with this quarterback, and I think we kind of need to lean into it. Play action passes. We have two excellent tight ends, excellent wide receivers. Keep them in that, you know, 10 to 20 range, and that worked. That was the fourth down drive. That was, you know, partially the touchdown drive we had as well. So, you know, it's almost like what we're seeing with Mac Jones on the Patriots. Like, let's water this thing down a little bit more of a simplified offense, which is beat them with big bodies. We have that ability, and it clearly works. It just feels like we just get overeager with the fact that we have Zay Flowers, who's going to be open 50 yards downfield every play. But, like, that's not the game plan that we need to take. And if we just kind of stick to these drives that we've seen now work, like, our offense is still going to be excellent. It's going to be different than what we expected coming in, but it's still going to be a very, very good offense.
I think Denny can hit those throws. I know he hasn't this season.
He hasn't. He hasn't time and time again, 3 years in now.
No, he hit him a bunch last year, Matt.
He hit UVA a couple times, and we don't need to go back to UVA.
He's just got
to
channel the UVA game. And also, the Syracuse game and the NC State game in 2019, like, I know his whole catalog, Matt, so I can picture the five or six throws that he made. The Notre Dame throw back in 2019 when we were a garbage football team, and we got smoked by Notre Dame, but he hit, I think it was Kobe in the end zone. That was a hell of a throw. So, listen, I know they're isolated instances, but it's also – I mean, it's not like his passing percentage sucks. Like, his QBR is okay. Like, he's playing.
No, because again, the game plan is tailored to these shorter throws, sure, as it should be. It's just like every now and then we throw these in, and that's when the mistakes
happen. Whether you hit him or not, like, it does keep the defense honest, and it sets up the sort of medium routes if you say, hey, I'm going to go deep one every 10 plays type of thing. So I don't want to throw that away completely. And in fact, Halfley said explicitly today, hey, that's a big part of our offense, and we're not going to shy away from it. Which now makes me think that he's not going to do it anymore if he's saying that out loud. But I think the bigger issue to me is when Denny feels like he has to force things when the run game isn't working. And we gained what? It was a net of 46 rushing yards against Clemson. Mm-hmm. I think that's the biggest issue. 1.4 yards per carry. Like, that's not going to get it done. And it puts an unfair amount of pressure on Dennis to sort of manufacture chances out of thin air. I do think, you know, to your point, if we could hit those 15 yarders to Trey Berry every single time, we would. But I think you have to, like, there's a little more science to it, I think. And I don't really understand it. I've never coached, but you sort of have to get in rhythm, keep the defense guessing. You can't just throw those every time type of thing. But I think all this.
Yeah, you've played Madden, though. You've played Madden. You get it. So I will appreciate your sentiment there.
I was just saying, all this goes away, and you're right, I have, and I dominate. That was kind of our quarterback / coach for Intrabrow, at least I like to think so.
Yeah.
Which didn't.
0-15, by the way.
I could have sworn we won a game. Maybe not. All this goes away if we can establish, you know, a threat in the run game. And then those medium routes are there, and we have single coverage. And that's all Denny needs. If he can get single coverage on those 12-yard out routes, like, that's it. That's it. And then we sustain those 7-minute drives, right? And that's all. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. So I don't know what happened against Clemson. Obviously, they have a great defensive front, regardless of injuries. So the fact they were to stop our run game, I think, had more of a bearing on the game than those couple of missed, you know, long passes that sure would have been great to have. But even Phil doesn't hit those every single time either, right? So, you know, I'm sure they used the bye week to work on those. And I did get the sense that Zay was getting a little bit frustrated, right? I mean, I'm sure it must be frustrating to, you know, do your job on plays like that, get the 5 yards of separation, and then just be overthrown. So I get that, and I totally get what you guys are saying, you and the rest of the BC universe. But Denny also did a lot of good things on Saturday. I hate that he's being vilified for that fumble, because he's our guy. We need him, and he's going to have to step up big time on Saturday. No one else is coming in. No one else is playing that quarterback position.
No.
Shut up about Dalen Menard, okay? I'm sure he's a great kid. Shut up about Dalen Menard.
Yeah, I mean, I 100% agree with that. We are in no way, shape, or form even near the discussion of Denny's not the right guy or the best guy to lead this team forward right now. And I think that, you know, we've seen that time and again. But again, this team played well enough to win on Saturday, last Saturday. That's the bottom line for me. And while it is incredibly frustrating, and you know, you and I are both very anti-moral victories, as I know Halfley is, there are still some things that we can take away from that to be very positive about you know, the rest of this season and our ability to capture the ACC, our ability to go, you know, 11-1 or, you know, to a New Year's Six Bowl, whatever it is, like our goals are still very, very attainable. National championship, like, no, frankly, that's out the window. But to be completely honest, in this ACC, with how bad the conference is, we could gone, you know, 13-0 with the ACC championship. And that still might not have been enough. Like, that's just the way the bias is against BC and how bad the ACC is this year. So, you know, is what it is. And you know, is it, the ability for us to still go out and win a conference in Halfley's second year is, you know, a massive feat. And I'm sure we're still huge Vegas underdogs on that. But based on what we've seen five games in, like, I still, and I mean this with no hyperbole, like, I feel very confident in our ability to do that. So
no, that's a good point.
A lot of positives, and you know, we'll see what happens.
And a lot of the issues we saw were a result of a raucous away environment, right? Mm-hmm. When you talk about the turnovers, right? If you told us coming in that we were going to lose the turnover battle, was it 3-0? Right? We had two picks. Yep. and that fumble.
Yeah, you could count the fourth down stop and the block punt, if you will.
That's true.
But in general, it was, you know. Yeah.
But if you told us that at the beginning and we still had the ball on the 12-yard line with a chance to win the ball game at Clemson, mm-hmm. we'd all be thrilled with that. The penalties, I guess I'll chalk that up to, again, you know, very loud environment that we weren't prepared for, and it's tough to prepare for until you're in it. So, you know, I guess my point being that they did enough to win a ball game against, you know, a historically good opponent. So that's all great. But from a strategic standpoint, you know, hopefully there's not that much to fix. You know, we get a couple games at home coming up that are, you know, big time ball games. And, you know, if we don't have to deal with that variable, you know, I like our squad a lot better. We played great at home so far, right? We smoked Colgate and then played well enough against Missouri to come out of there with a W. So, you know, I think to your point of it's been 2 years since they've seen an environment like that. I think that's important. And we'll get into the keys of the game to NC State, but we got to be loud on Saturday. Anyone listening, if you're a student, if you're under the age of 40 and you have a voice the next day after Saturday's game, like that's, I mean, you got to be loud because it has an impact this year.
Yeah, well, I completely, again, I think teams are not necessarily used to these potentially loud environments. The acoustics of alumni are really built to get loud for whatever reason.
Sure.
So let's use that to our advantage. Matt, I'm ready to put Clemson in the rearview mirror.
Yep.
and fast forward to when we see them next year, if that's cool with you.
Let's do it. All right. Do you want to do a special edition? There was some chitter chatter. There's some litigation in the BC world. Do you want to put that in the courtroom, Matt, or should we run that by our chief legal officer?
Yeah, let's move into the courtroom. Let's be very careful about this because you and I are certainly not lawyers. There is ongoing litigation, and you know, I read the story briefly, but you know, did not really get into all the facts. So I'm going to tiptoe around this as much as possible, and maybe we phone our lawyer just to make sure, you know, we're not saying anything that's going to get BC in trouble. But do you want to go ahead and give a quick recap of the Heights story that broke this morning?
Are we really going to talk about this? Yeah, let's do it. Why not? So there was the previous women's soccer coach, I believe, and now I'm paraphrasing. I read the story like 12 hours ago, but she's now Allison Foley is suing the university for gender discrimination. Telephone
legal
wiretapping. That's right.
Telephone fraud.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's like a way to describe it. But that's.
I was thinking wire fraud, but it was really wiretapping.
Yeah.
No, you're right.
Yeah.
Yikes. As a fraud guy, I should really know my frauds.
Yeah, that's tough.
So I don't know. I guess she was really tough to work with, but she was, you know, very highly effective as a coach, and they won a lot of ball games. I guess her and Martin Jarman did not get along. She kept getting these one-year deals when she thought she deserved multi-year contracts. I don't know. I don't want to give a take on anything like this that's going to get us in trouble. But, you know, corporate America, this happens all the time with employees that separate from companies, right? So there's two sides to every story. I'm sure that it'll come out. It just sucks that it's just kind of a black eye on the administration at this point because names were named in the story. It had Marty dropping an F-bomb at one point in the Heights, which
yeah.
I didn't think you could even do in the BC Heights article. You couldn't do that when I was there.
They're just getting really sloppy with
yeah.
the public. Well, you wrote for the – what did you write, for the Gavel or the New England
no,
Classic?
No, the Observer. So,
the Observer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that was a great set. It was – for
Sorry.
Me, it was like once a month you publish a newspaper article. If you don't send it in, it's okay. Like, no big deal. The Heights is intense. The Heights is like, that's your full-time job. But anyway, so, yeah,
yeah.
I have no other takes. It is what it is. But we figured we have this half-lease corpus segment, so why not break into the courtroom and see what happens?
Yeah, this is the first time we've actually discussed a real legal case, which is interesting. Normally, we're more tort guys, yep. But now we're discussing legitimate litigation.
It sounds like you have a hot take. Let's hear your hot take on the situation.
No, I don't. I'm going to say, again, no real comment, and it's ongoing as per the Jason Baum news release in the Heights. But, you know, what I'll say, again, I think that there's friction in any sport when a new any job, really, when a new boss comes in, right? When you get a new athletic director and you've been comfortable with the prior administration for the past 22 years, like, it's natural that there's friction there. I think any coach should be looking over his or her shoulder when a new AD comes into the picture. The Martin Jarmon quote, though, of basically saying, I don't really care about culture, I just want to win. I'm very loosely paraphrasing there and getting rid of some bad words that he said, which I didn't know Martin had in him, but like the fire. But, at the end of the day, like, I can't fault him for that approach, right? And again, we have I've read the story and that's all we know. But the idea being, like, think about last year when we finally fired Christian. If we didn't fire Christian, we all know he's a great guy, and we knew that he was kind of building his team the right way, had high character people.
Are you still defending, like, Jim Christian?
No, okay. I'm not. I'm saying, like, if we didn't fire him because, we said, and the excuse the Kraft gave was like, oh, he's a great guy, he's building a good character or a good culture, like, we as fans would be livid. And at the end of the day, the athletic director's job is to put winning teams on the field. So, I'm not, again, with the information we have right now, and I'm really just basing off that one quote, because I didn't really read the article in full detail, but, I don't view this as any sort of culture problem or anything. And the other thing too, Matt, important is that, this is now a past administration, right? There's no, this doesn't even really go up to like the board of trustees level, right? This is our former athletic director who, was widely loved and for good reason, but I don't really view this as any stain on anything that we currently have going on. And it's something that the lawyers will address. And that's that.
Yeah, agree. And the new coach sucks, right? The new coach that was hired, like, they've won like 2 games.
That is the wild card. He is absolutely, again, I don't follow any of the soccer's men's or women's, but per the Heights, right? He's won like 2 conference games in the last 3 years. Like, that's hard to do. I thought we were a good soccer school, but yeah, so that certainly doesn't help the case. But yeah, again, I think, We leave it at that. We don't have enough information. Maybe there'll be a documentary someday. It'll be good.
One other enjoyable excerpt from the article was, so the recorded phone call, I guess she was allegedly drunk, although she denies it and said she maybe had a glass of wine. I find that to be a humorous situation. I don't know why the student was recording her. And as you know, Massachusetts, I think you need permission to record, which she did not get, hence the lawsuit. But that's just kind of a funny wrinkle that, I don't know. I have nothing else to say on this either, man. But yeah. Hey, glad we covered it. I thought that was good. Thought that was people were asking us to say a few words about it. Yep. So you're welcome. Matt, while we have you in Halfley's corpus,
please.
I mean, I guess you want to talk quickly about ACC. We kind of already did it, but I guess here's this one. The one question is, do you believe the hype with Wake Forest? Fraud or not?
Look, they're not Enron. They're not Tyco. Yeah. They're not Under Armour. But they're not running a business the most, ethically honest way either. I'll say that, right? Like, I think there is some, not I don't want to say fraudulent behavior, mm-hmm. but there's an inflated stock
just
price.
Some aggressive rev rec policies.
Correct. Yeah. Right. Nothing that would really, put not Dave Doran, Dave Clawson in jail.
It's probably the first time Dave Clawson's been accused of anything negative his entire life.
Yeah. No white collar crime going on here, but I have some doubts. I have some concerns. Now, I will say Syracuse, I think, is a better team than we're giving credit for. And that was like the hot pick on game day. I think like two of them picked Cuse to beat Wake as their upset special of the day, which shocked me. And they kept it very close and took it to overtime, had obviously a great chance to win that game. So, Clemson or Cuse is a little better than we initially thought and were initially giving credit for. But I don't know, man. Again, Wake really hasn't played.
They played
too much.
Nobody.
Yet.
They played like their best win, I guess, was UVA, but everyone thought UVA was good then. They played nobody, and even preseason, the way the schedule lines up for Wake, everyone was saying these guys are going to be 8-0 just by virtue of not playing anyone, and that has been the case. But they've struggled to get here. They barely beat Louisville. They barely beat Syracuse, in overtime, right? They played Norfolk State and Old Dominion and teams like that, right? So Florida State was thrown in there. Here's the other thing, though. They also don't play anyone until NC State November 13th, Clemson November 20th, and then us November 27th. Talk about that for a murderer's row. So
yeah,
they
tough.
Could very well go from 9-0 to 9-3. So, sure. You know, I guess we'll see what happens with that. I don't believe the hype. I don't think they're the 16th best team in the country, but right now they're the front runners. So I guess we have to keep them in mind, but shape it up to be a very, very interesting ACC for the first time in quite some time. It's fun to be in the mix.
Yeah, completely. And I think Wake is getting somewhat of a bump from, you know, they're a likable team. It's a likable head coach. They're a program that is, you know, in a, you know, relatively football rich area, right? North Carolina, but has historically not been good. So like, it's a school that people get excited about when they're doing well in the national media. It's almost the same as like if Vanderbilt, you know, had some, you know, 5-0 start, right? Like people are getting behind it a little bit. I think that is playing a part, but you know, again, they really haven't run into much trouble yet. But I do think at the end of the day, it is going to be us, Clemson, NC State, Wake Forest. And it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, there's a 4-way tie. It wouldn't surprise me if, or that, I don't know if that's mathematically possible. It probably is. Everyone can lose one game, right?
Technically.
Because we beat NC State. Yep. We can't lose again. We'd beat Wake Forest. And then, no, someone would need to have two losses, either NC State or Wake or Clemson, because they still have to play each other.
I trust that you did the
whatever, right? It's not going to surprise me if there's, it's not going to, math guy, it's not going to surprise me if, you know, there's a log jam at the top with a bunch of 1 and 2 lost teams. And you know, I think certainly I expect us to be one of them. So we'll see. I will say the computers right now love Pitt. Read some article the other day, I think it was CBS, but they were basically doing like a BCS, you know, style projection on, you know, what the Final Four could look like. And, you know, the computers are basically saying like a 1-loss Pitt is, you know, assuming they were to run the table and win the ACC, like that's still in the discussion for college football playoff, which is insane to me. I just don't believe a coastal team can pull that off, but
hey, it's one of those years.
It's one of those
years. You were joking about
it. It's a weird year.
You were joking
about
it. Like even if we went undefeated in the ACC, like the ACC is so bad, but you look at the rest of college football, like the Big Four is not the Big Four this year. Even Alabama just went down last week.
Yep.
Ohio State's not Ohio State. Clemson's certainly not Clemson. Oklahoma, if they put this new quarterback in, has a chance to be Oklahoma again. But like, it seems like everyone has an additional 1 to 2 losses, you know, upcoming this year. So I don't know. I mean, I think we're all begging for more parity. We're sick of seeing the same four teams in the college football playoff. I know I am. So maybe we're starting to get our chance here. Maybe there's a shift and there's the chance for some new teams to emerge, like a Boston College,
like a
Boston College is right. So
yeah, just leave it at that. Don't listen to the other teams there. It's us. This is our year.
That's right. That's right. Cool. All right. I got nothing else on my agenda. I was really hoping Virginia Tech would pull off that win against Notre Dame. I don't even want to talk about it. Cost me a massive amount of money. I had a 16 parlay going, and Virginia Tech had to do was cover. And they went up by 8 with a couple minutes to go, and they blew it. So I don't even want to talk about that.
I don't blame you. You may have jinxed that one. You tweeted with 5 minutes to go. You're like, what a day for strength schedule. UMass wins. Someone else wins. Vatek beats Notre Dame.
Not an accountant.
I was very confused if you were in like a different like time zone or what was going on.
Not
there.
That I'm an accountant, but I had thought that they took the lead by 9. So I thought it was a 2-possession game. The math was wrong. And by then it was like, what am I going to do? Delete the tweet?
No, you got to just leave it up. So. Yeah. No, I hear you, man.
All right, you ready to talk NC State?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's get out of this courtroom. Cool. That was new ground for us.
That was kind of fun, though. This is an agenda-free Wednesday. You guys are welcome for us jamming this episode in. It's been a crazy week, but we wanted to get on the mic. By the way, we're heading out, which we'll probably talk about that shortly. But
we'll talk about this.
Yeah. All right.
About
this. Do you have an ad read, or what do you want to do next?
No, let's just get right into it. Look, I mean, I'll say this. I'll caveat the next, you know, however long this goes, 15 minutes with. Like, it's not surprising, but I'm at the point of the year where I'm going much more off of feel and the eye test than, like, stats or analytics or research, which, like, goes totally against my mathematical nature. People forget I'm a math major, Bachelor of Science, which is the harder of the two math majors. But with that said, we can dive into it. But I feel really, really good about our chances on Saturday night. Like, I'm getting Miami a couple years ago, Florida State, you know, the year before that. Those are the types of feel I'm getting for this night game at Alumni on Saturday.
It's an interesting matchup. It really is. I mean, if you look at their strengths and our strengths and our weaknesses and their weaknesses, they're a lot alike. We both have a lot of playmakers on the offensive side of the football. We have sort of an unproven quarterback, but weapons all around in both in the run game and the pass game. Our O-line's a little bit better than theirs. But on the flip side, you know, their defense seems to be a little bit better than ours, at least up front. But then their secondary sucks. So, you know, it seems like both of these teams are flawed, and it's just going to come down to, certainly coaching, right? Who utilized the bye week better? Stevie Adazio, love him or hate him. I know most of you guys hate him. He was electric coming off of byes. You can't deny that.
Yeah.
He was. I mean,
he was electric because there was like three wild trick plays that he pulled out, you know, over the 2 weeks, but that's about it.
Yeah, but they always hit. And we just had most of our big wins came off byes. So I don't know, you know, if he just, you know, tried hard after. I don't know what it was, but I don't think we've seen Halfley coming off a bye. I don't know. But, you know, a lot of teams get concerned about the Clemson hangover, and I'm hoping with the bye week jammed in between the Clemson loss, that's not a factor. I don't think it will be. I think the night game sort of mitigates any type of, you know, rust or any type of sleepwalking through the first quarter type of thing. People are going to be jacked up to play, especially, you know, on the defensive side of the football. People have been, you know, on the sidelines for a couple of weeks. They're going to want to hit the opponent. Everyone knows it's a massive game. And, you know, it's kind of the rare instance where we haven't played a game like this against a peer opponent that has this type of implications just because of Clemson since, I don't know, a decade. Like, it's been a really long time since a game has mattered this much.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because, you know, we are at this type of season where if things continue to progress the way in which we expect them to progress, like, you can make an argument that every game is the biggest game of the year. But this one, I think, clearly is. If you're looking, again, like I said, at those four teams that I could really see being at the top of the Atlantic at the end of this, you know, clearly NC State is one of those. That goes without saying. So this one is absolutely massive. Halfley is 1-0 off a bye. He beat Louisville 34-27. I don't really remember much about that game.
Yeah.
But that was post the Notre Dame
game. After Notre Dame in November. That's right. And then Louisville was Thanksgiving weekend, if I recall.
Thanksgiving. Yeah, I don't really remember much about that game. 34-27.
That was the Denny game. And that was the Denny scampering. I think he had 3,000 yards rushing that game. I think he might have caught a pass. I think Denny might have caught a pass, might have been a little trick play. I was going to save this for my keys to the game. But, Matt, we have not done a trick play all season long. It has been the most vanilla. What's like? We haven't come close to doing a trick play. We did an Xavier Coleman's jet sweep at one point. I think that was the closest we've come to try and do a trick play. I think we're going to, like, literally 90% of the plays, I think, might be trick plays on Saturday. Something to watch for, I guarantee. And if there's a bookie out there that will take this bet, I guarantee you that we will score a touchdown on a flea flicker or some type of, like, C.J. Lewis pass to Grossell or something like that. I guarantee it. And we're going to be there Saturday, and I'm going to tell you I told you so as soon as it happens. So
do you think we're running just do you think the playbook is just being basically shipped up? I forget my Massachusetts highways. I haven't lived there in a little while. But basically being shipped between Chestnut Hill and – no, the Mass Pike goes east to west. I'm basically saying 495. Whatever. I'm saying from Chestnut Hill to, well, it'd be south because we're going from Chestnut Hill to Foxborough.
I didn't know what you were talking about in my defense.
Yeah, so let me get there. If you let me get there, you'd get it. But basically, I think it's 495 or 95 or 93. Route 1.
One of those, now.
Right? Yeah, I sure am. I think anyways.
95 south. Or it is Route 1 that gets you at least close to Foxborough. You should know this.
Yeah, but
you should know Rentham and all that.
It's the two rings of, like, there's the inner circle, and one of those is 93, and then there's the outer one that connects you from Chestnut Hill to Foxborough. Anyways, we're getting sidetracked.
Matt.
I think it is. I believe it is 495. Anyways, we're getting sidetracked. My point is that, to your point, like, we talked about this earlier, of keeping this simple game plan of play action passes, you know, 10, 20-yard routes. It feels like the Patriots and the Eagles are kind of using, like, the same playbook, and they should be. And if you look back to the last weekend or 2 weeks ago now against the Bucs, there were, you know, multiple trick plays and they all involved, I'm going to blank on the name now, but the old NC State wide receiver who was a high school quarterback Jacoby Myers throwing passes out of the backfield. So I think that, to your point, that's going to play a large part on Saturday. And trick plays get the crowd going. Like, this is going to be a loud, energetic crowd. Halfley is a smart guy. He knows that that's going to get us riled up. So I'm with you.
I'm going to be furious.
That was a long way to say I agree with
you. They might not run like a normal play the entire game. Like, they must have, like, they must be so ready to go. And, like, this is the game to pull it out on. I understand not trying to do it on the road when you can barely snap the ball in Clemson, but now's the time to do it. Flea flickers always work. Like, when Missouri ran the flea flicker on us, that hits 100 times out of 100. No, you can't stop.
In the pros, it does.
You cannot stop a flea flicker. It's one of those impossible plays to defend. Until you run it twice. You only get one try to a flea flicker, but it always works. So that's one key to the game, but that's we kind of skipped ahead. So anyway, let's talk about NC State quickly here.
Yeah, please.
So they got some corncob quarterback, Devin Leary, who is having a decent year. He's not overwhelmingly good. He was the QB in place when we beat them by like a billion points in 2019, when they just gave up like 500 yards rushing to Bailey and Dylan. Devin Leary was the guy that saw that, was pretty, couldn't do much against our defense, which wasn't great back then.
By the way, quick, I'm going to interrupt you quickly because we just forgot to do this. Eagles in the wild, A.J. Dillon is now the best pass catching running back in the league.
That's true.
It just feels like Steve Adazio could have leveraged that to a couple more wins, to throw the ball to our Heisman candidate running back.
I'll tell you what, too, watching Sack Allen and Harold Landry just have unreal games, like that just hurts because, and this is, I don't want to go another rant about our D-line here, but like, if you have a good D end, ideally you have two good D ends, like you're unstoppable. That's the only good position you need to have on defense, and you're good. If you don't have good D ends, you're screwed. Like that's really what defense comes down to. And, you know, we had so many years that we didn't know how lucky we were having Harold Landry, having, you know, Zach Allen, even having guys like KPL that could get off the edge, you know, just not having that for this long now, you see just how debilitating it is for our defense. But anyway, it's great. They're doing great in the pros. Happy for them. What was I saying? All right, so NC State has – you were talking about Jacoby Myers. NC State has good receivers. They have Amezi Emeki. It's one of those two. This guy, Devin Carter, potentially is his name, as well as Thayer Thomas, who's like this Julian Edelman-type guy. Three really dangerous pass catchers that can do some damage. They've made a lot of really impressive catches this season already. They also have a two-headed rushing attack, Ricky Person Jr. and Bam Knight, who I don't have the stats in front of me, but they've racked up a ton of yardage, not quite as much as Garwell, but you know, they're in the ballpark. And so those guys can run, and they have a pretty good line. The line was decent last year. They returned a lot of veterans from last year. So, you know, offensively they can put up points, and what they did against Clemson was sustain drives. And that's really how they won, is they controlled the ball for like 42 minutes against Clemson. And you know, when they're clicking, That's a recipe for success, right? I mean, if you're going to control the ball for 42 minutes, you're probably going to win the ball game more often than not. So it really comes down to third down conversion. You know, if we can get stops early on early drives, force them into third and long, that's what this game comes down to. I'd prefer to not do the strategy of bend but don't break and then start trying once we get into the red zone. Seems like that kind of works, but I don't know how sustainable that is or how much that comes down to luck. So that's kind of the scouting report on that side of the football. Anything to add there, Matt?
No, Matt, I think you nailed it. Again, you mentioned that you were on another podcast, an NC State podcast this week. So you're the expert
Tuffy
here.
Check him out. Tuffy Talk. I tweeted out the link. Great guys. And I'll say this about NC State. We don't like most NC State people. These guys were great. Enjoyed the time with them. Part two is coming out tomorrow, Matt. So
You know who I liked? We're talking NC State fans. The guy who sold us his parking pass.
Great guy.
When we went down there 2 years ago. Really nice guy. Gave us a lot of good recommendations.
You know what the issue
but
was?
Beyond that, I'm like 0-1,000 on NC State fans.
That first guy, who I think his name was like Trey or something Southern like that. I think
is Trey a Southern name?
Yeah, yeah, big time. Yeah, when it's spelled T-R-E-Y, I think that's a big Southern name.
Okay. I was thinking like Trent. I don't know. Trent feels more Southern. That's because we know a Southern Trent.
Yeah. Why can't I think of any Southern names right now?
You lived at Caleb.
Yeah, that's a good one. Although that's a little backwoodsy.
That's the South, though.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Anyways, so, what do you got?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, that guy was great, and he gave us his the parking pass, no questions asked. We had to pay him for it. But
some questions were asked.
But then, like, we talked, and he had the accent. We just got in there, so spirits were high. And he set the bar a little too high, I think, as far as NC State fans go. We had some that were good. Like our neighbors at the tailgate were fine, but then once we got into the game, we met some bad eggs, bad Wolf Pack. So that kind of tainted our view of NC State fans. But that said, if you're an
NC
State
fan, which makes
sense,
who's going to hire Dave Doran, right? Like, it makes sense. It makes sense.
I'll tell you what, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree when it comes to the coaching.
Sure doesn't.
Yeah. So if you're an NC State fan that's listening, I don't know, and you want to try to redeem yourself on behalf of the fan base, let us know. We'll be tailgating. We'll get to the tailgating momentarily here. But don't hesitate to reach out if you see a couple guys rocking Fourth and Dude apparel and koozies. So, but anyway, Matt, we're getting off track here.
Yeah, a little
what
bit.
What I wanted
sure
to do was talk about the football game. So let's get back to that. On the other side of the football, their defense has been not so great. Their defense, their front four, while not as bad as ours, they haven't had a lot of luck getting to the quarterback. we're actually tied with them for sacks per game with 7 through 5 games, which is bad for both of us. The issue for them is that while we have good D-backs and our D-backs can be put on islands, even if we're not getting pressure to the quarterback, I don't think NC State has that luxury. From what I've seen, they're susceptible through the air. Mississippi State, that's how Mississippi State put up some of their points, was through the air. And, you know, we know how bad of a combination it is. You can't get pressure and you can't stay with your guy for an extended period. That's a recipe for disaster. So point being, if Denny can get cooking, this is probably the time to do it. If they're going to be playing for the run, which it sounds like based on Dorn's press conference, he doesn't realize that we have a new coach and we can actually, you know, toss the football. He's playing for the run. He said that, you know, BC plays a lot of 12 personnel and they, you know, play in a phone booth. He was saying shit like that, which just isn't true anymore. Or hopefully it's not true under Cignetti on Saturday. But, you know, I think the opportunities will be there for one-on-one downfield. And if Denny can take advantage of that, that will certainly bode well. I think this is a big time get back on track game for my guy, Denny.
Yeah. Yeah, that's my takeaway as well. I think that this is exactly what the doctor ordered for really every unit on offense. Again, you mentioned whatever it was, 1.4 yards per carry against Clemson. We should be able to dominate them up front and have an explosive running day like we saw against, maybe not like we saw against Missouri, but because that was the worst defense I think I've ever seen in my lifetime at a Power 5 opponent. But we should have a very significant day on the ground. And likewise in the passing game. Look, like there's going to be a lot of guys open all day. So if Denny is going to right this ship, as we hope, maybe expect that he will, this is the game to do it, and this is going to really set the tone for the rest of it. Big confidence builder. Again, I have a lot of confidence. And again, like I said, you know, with Clemson, like our defense is good enough to, you know, win us football games, period. So even if, you know, NC State's a little stronger on offense, like I trust our defense to keep them out of the end zone, keep them to field goals when they do get in the red zone and, you know, make a couple plays here and there to, you know, tilt the momentum in our favor. So, you know, overall, Matt, I've said a lot of, you know, the amount of confidence I have in this game. I'm feeling really good about Saturday night.
Yeah, I'm really, and on the defensive side of the football, I really hope that we've utilized the bye week as well to sort of mix up, you know, schematically mix up the blitz coverages. I don't know why we're not sending the house every time. I know you can't do that on paper, I guess, but like
that's why. Yeah, you can't do it.
I know, but like I hate our current game plan of we're not going to get pressure and it is what it is. Like we have to find ways, whether it's, you know, doing some type of stunts or you know, getting the linebackers more involved. There just has to be a way to try to manufacture some type of pass rush. It's so frustrating when they, you know, they have all day to throw back there and you just get dink and dunked because, you know, it's literally 7 seconds back there. So, yeah, that's something to watch for, certainly. And then just in general, you know, I already talked about, you know, the battle of third down. We've been one of the top teams in the country on third down, holding teams to just 27% conversion rate. That's seventh in the country, tied with Georgia, who is by far one of the best defenses in the country. Get this, Matt. NC State's actually even better. They hold teams to 23% on third down. So, as is always the case in college football, third down is going to be huge. Who can win the time of possession? Who can sustain drives? I think the Missouri game plan is right on the money. If the run game's there, keep cranking. You know, make them come up and defend you. And then Denny Pancakes, baby. This is his coming out game. I'm not quite saying UVA output, but the potential's there. I think their secondary is susceptible. I know Zay is, you know, just eager to get going. Hasn't had his breakout game yet. I think we can put up a heck of a lot of points on Saturday if a couple things fall our way. If we establish the run, that's all it is. And, you know, I thought the O-line played pretty well, all things considered, against Clemson. So I think that's probably a key matchup to watch as well. And here's my last key to the game, Matt. I already said it, be loud. NC State's played one game on the road all season, and they really struggled. It was against Mississippi State. They could not handle the Cowbells in Mississippi State. We got to do the same thing. If we're loud, we throw them off their game. NC State was never really in that game. They went down early and couldn't climb out of the hole. So tell you, it's right there in front of us. We just got to take it.
Matt, I think that's an excellent segue into tailgate ability. Matt, you'll like this. Cue the Sammy Adams remix because we are officially coming home.
Yes.
It is our first time back on the Heights in 2 years. This, to me, is just a massive tailgate ability score. Top 25 opponent. Huge ACC implications for the first time I can remember. Night game. Thinking it will be a sellout or very close to it. You know, I will say, Matt, the downside, Weather looks not great right now. The tailgate weather is going to be nice. It's going to be like 73 and cloudy, which is, you know, gorgeous for an October, what is it, 16th? But right now there is the chance for some rain to creep in around kickoff, which is, you know, not really what we're looking for sitting there. You know, but whatever, if it's
great
enough to change the game,
disagree.
Maybe I'd rather be comfortable watching the game if we're going to win either way, but I'd rather be comfortable. Anyway,
we got a better run game. We got better big men on the line. They can rain all night as far as I'm concerned.
All right. Well, then maybe this is going to increase your score, but Matt, this is going to be a really high score for me. 29.2.
Wow. Let's go.
It's huge. Look, I mean, yeah, we'll be there, you know, whatever, right? When the gates open 4 hours before, we'll be bouncing around Brighton, Mod Lot, Shea. We've got a ton of Get In and Denny koozies that we'll be handing out. So come find us. The only slight downside I'll give here, other than the potential weather, is I wish the Sox weren't going to be on at the exact same time as the tailgate, but it is football season. Get your priorities straight. Maybe you're lucky to be next to some like elite tailgate that has a TV and all that, but I'm incredibly excited to get back up there. Going to be a hell of a Saturday. And you heard Hathaway's press conference yesterday or today, but you know, get in early. This team deserves our energy and support for the full 60 minutes. You know, let's make it happen. Like if you're listening to this podcast at this point, you're clearly in like the top, you know, 1% of BC football fans. You're kind of the BC football fan that I'm sure all your like friends are looking to for insight and analysis. Spread the word. Get in early. Get your tailgates in early. Talk to, you know, your fellow alumni who maybe don't care as much. Get people in early. That's going to be huge. Set the tone. Like you said, you know, this stadium gets really loud on a Saturday night, and that's going to be a massive, massive key to the game. And again, this team deserves it. So, you know, that's my biggest thing. And the only thing I want to note there, Matt, is if Jason Baum is listening, and we mentioned this on Twitter, he hasn't responded yet. I think some field passes would be nice and frankly deserved. I feel like we've earned that.
And we're loosely affiliated with EagleInsider.com. So I feel like,
loosely.
Yeah, like if you're looking for an excuse, J-Bomb, like you can, like that works. I think there's enough gray area there where you can give us a field pass. Yeah, I think those are a lot of good points you made there, Matt. That was a well-prepared segment on tailgateability.
Yeah, I did prepare a little bit on the tailgateability. That's fair.
I got 29.3.
Oh, you bastard.
I'll tell you, I can't wait to get up there. It's been a long time coming since we've been there, especially since we've been there for a meaningful football game. It's going to be sort of, especially if it's raining, night game, maybe reminiscent of like a USC. I'm not saying
the
that
opposite,
empty state.
Though. It's the opposite, though, of the rain at the tailgate to the dry game.
Matt, your weather app sucks, and it's never accurate. So I'm not putting a lot of stock into that. But I'll tell you, conference implications this late in the year. It's been a while since we've had that, probably actually since Clemson game day a couple of years back. So as big of a game as that, certainly more winnable than that game. And yeah, this will set the tone for the rest of the season. So bring your A game, and there's no excuse, to your point, Matt, absolutely zero excuse not to be there in the seats by 7:15 latest. Get there for kickoff, get your seat, get, you know, front row, whatever, and just make it happen. All right, with that, Matt, my final score prediction. I know we went a little out of order here. I got 27-24 Boston College.
I like it. I smell a classic BC primetime game. Again, like I said, feels a little bit like Miami and Florida State, but I feel like if you were to go through the archives, there's a lot of these. This team is hungry to break the, you know, whole no top 25 wins since USC streak. I'll be honest, I don't see this one, you know, particularly close. Our defense, I really trust to keep them out of the end zone. Denny is going to have his breakout Heisman game. The run game is going to get back on track. Alumni is loud from start to finish. I'm going BC 32, NC State 13.
Wow.
And maybe that's a touchdown and two field goals. Yeah, it's a route. It's comfortable all night.
Well, listen, I like it. And to me, it comes down to, you know, same thing as Missouri. You know, that's the game plan. Dominate up front, get the run game cooking, and we get out of there with an easy W. That's all it is. I'm with you there, Matt. Well, it's not a Saturday, folks. This is going to be fun. If you're heading to the game, and I hope all you guys are, let us know. Either hit us up in the DMs. Otherwise, find us on Brighton or on Shea, actually. I'll be on Shea for
or the
most
mods.
Part.
It's going to be all of it. We're going to be all over. We'll be in every lot.
But let us
and
know.
We have
if you're
about
there.
100 koozies to give out.
Yeah, and you know what we should do, Matt? And we should talk about this. I think we should set up like a charitable thing where like you can donate $5 to a good cause, like the Frady's Foundation or something. We'll figure that out. And I don't want to recoup my funds necessarily, but I think it'd be nice to have, you know, people donate to a good cause. We'll see if we can figure that out in time. So stay tuned.
It's a logistical nightmare, man. The post office these days, those shipping delays.
The post office, it's just all online these days, I think, Matt.
You can't email a koozie.
No, I know. Well, I think we're probably going to run out on Saturday, I would think.
Yeah, we are. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, that's my goal. I'm going up with them in a bag. If you see me on the Amtrak, I'll be the guy in the BC Polo. I'll have some on
you
me.
You know what's going to be funny is because people are idiots and they've been hating on Denny. People are going to like not want the Denny ones. And I'll tell you, if you don't want a Denny koozie, then you don't get a Bud Light koozie. That's going to be my rule.
Yeah, I agree.
So.
I totally agree. I think that's fair. All right. Anyways, thanks again for listening. I cannot wait for Saturday night. Again, looking forward to seeing a ton of you on the Heights. Matt, 15-0 might be dead, but the ACC is still ours for the taking, and you cannot go 13-1 without 5-1.
Get in, folks. I'm coming home. I'm coming home. Boston's own. You know I'm coming home. I'm off the road. All these flights I've flown. Every city in the world, all across the globe. So please don't miss me when I'm gone. I'll be back for you. Know it won't be too long. So there's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong. Put your hands up, cause I'm coming home. I can't explain the feeling that I get seconds before I step up on the stage. In each city that I rip, I know I'm repping the only town from which you see me came. Whether I'm up in Cleveland, it's even New Orleans by morning. You know that really nothing gon' change. Flying over towns, I don't even know their names. I told them about the way the boss can be doing things. Pretty no doubt, New Giddy sold out. Philly showed us the love the city is so real about. Not to mention the South. Hit NC, VA to Tennessee, drove up north, kill shot town, murder the D. I rip sunset, screaming we ain't done yet. Industry racks in my green room, trying to undress. Swear he, I'm still screaming for me, damn. And the only reason I do it is for the Sammy fans. I'm coming home, the boss is on.